Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, text the brother, 045-714-0550, and our Facebook page as well for your keyboard warriors. BBM 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS. I like to know the tradition. Traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across this deadly country, we ask welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong. All right, a recent naming of the IATSIS building has been named, and we're talking First Nation. First Nation people are at the table. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Alinta Barlow, a member of the Ngunnawal Community Language Group. On the line, we have Alinta. Very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, sis.
I'm from Canberra. We're the Ngunnawal people here. And I was born in Canberra and I've lived here most of my life. And I keep coming back all the time because I just love it. It's my home here.
Of course. Nothing like having footprint on soil and Mother Earth too, Deli, my sister. Listen, very good news. IATSIS building has been renamed in Ngunnawal language. So tell us about the yarn there, please.
So there's a group of us here in on Ngunnawal country here who've come together to form a language group. And we've been helping to revive the language here, the Ngunnawal language. And we thought we were brought up with the idea that we could name the IATSIS building. We thought that was an amazing idea. So we had a look at all of our resources, did some research, and found Murraga, the name of the building, which means Wadi Shield.
The meaning of Murraga is, sorry?
Murraga means Wadi Shield.
Okay, what a shield?
A wadi shield. So okay. A wadi shield is a type of shield.
Yes, okay, beautiful. And to me, a protector, if you look at a shield, it protects, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And the emblem of Murraga is actually a shield.
Okay.
So what IATSIS represents is a shield and to protect the information and culture from Indigenous people in Australia.
Was it an easy conversation in regard to talking to board of directors or the CEO or chief executive officer or whoever is at the table in regard to naming and putting a First Nation name to the building? Was it an easy transition as such?
Easy. He was very on board with the idea because the CEO is Indigenous as well. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Nothing beats black on black cases.
Yeah, that's true.
So how did it all came about? So you got together with the traditional owners and massaged some names, and Murraga was the name that was selected, yep?
Yeah, it was. We thought it was the best name suited because it was pretty short. There are a lot of long Ngunnawal words, which, we want it to be inclusive so everyone can read it and remember it and sort of say it easy, yeah.
And I think so fitting when you talk about a wadi shield. I mean, that's the meaning of a Murraga, and it's a perfect because if you look at what our IATSIS does, they protect and looked after all our stories, all our artwork, and artifacts, and so a very fitting name. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And there's two meanings for the shield as well. So a shield not also protects in the sense of from attacking or, in this case, from wadi spears, but a shield can also be used to carry, carry your young sorts of things like that, yeah.
Well, we are nurturing our beautiful stories and artwork and artifacts. So very, very deadly, my sister. Thank you very much. Now, your beautiful mother, she's a part of ISIS as well, is that right?
Yes, that's true, yes.
And a big shout-out to her as well. And it is a fantastic bridge builder for our mob and represent in so many ways. And thank you very much for sharing, Alinta.
Thank you. No worries. Thank you so much.
All the best, sis. Take care. Bye-bye. Adeliana, Alinta Barlow, her name is, member of the Ngunnawal Community Language Group, and recently naming the IATSIS building down there in Canberra, and the name is Murraga, which means Wadi Shield. And look, a tool of dual purposes, offering the holder protection against the powerful Wadi Spear Club, and which can also be used as a kulumon to hold babies and carry food as well. So you could say a protector as well, in more ways than one. Have your say, Yana Frong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416, and we're going to catch up a yarn with Kayla, apparently. Yes, too deadly.
Nation. what you doing? Your mom, it's me, Bushaka Bunji, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, money's not everything, but I rank it right up there with oxygen. The question here is, what will it take to truly close the financial gap for Australian Indigenous population? We're going to catch up a yarn now with Ian Hamm, and he's the chairperson of the First Nations First Nations Foundation. That's what he is, the chairperson. And got him on the line. Ian, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Yes, I'm fine down here in newly freed up Melbourne.
Newly freed up Melbourne. Yeah, thinking of you guys there. You are out of the woods at this point in time, or close to?
Yeah. We've just recorded, I think it's our seventh day in a row of zero cases.
Yes.
And zero deaths. So, yeah. I don't think we can be overtly confident that we're really out of the woods for a while yet, but we're very much on the way.
Yep, exactly. Well, heads up, thumbs up, and there's light at the end of the tunnel. Pandemic has caused an upset regarding life itself, you know, in all facets. We're going to talk to you about, financial literacy, financial intelligence, financial capability. What will it take to truly close the financial gap for Australian Indigenous population? First of all, Ian, if you just start with First Nations Foundation, who are your mob and what do you do?
Yeah, okay, so the First Nations Foundation, we were established nearly 20 years ago, actually, primarily to start off doing financial budgeting teaching to people, how to basically do face-to-face training with people around how to manage very low incomes, whether it was the pension or a very low wage that people were getting, which is really important, but I have to say it really doesn't deal with the problem of why should we be on low incomes to start with.
Yes.
So over time, the foundation's evolved to look at how do we provide people a broader suite of financial literacy education, particularly for those and younger people in particular who are moving into employment and, in fact, increasing their income as they, you know, go through their working life. And now we're also talking about superannuation.
Yes.
So the foundation has moved into a lot of different spaces, and we're also very much at the forefront of policy around access to financial well-being and financial services. So rather just being dealing with the problem, it's important for Aboriginal people to be part of the policy discussion at the highest levels, not just let everything happen and then we have to make the most of it.
If we bring it back a bit, my thinking is the curriculum needs to change. To get financial intelligence, there's not a lot of education in the school education curriculum in regarding training people, black and white, how to get financially intelligent or how to work a budget when they're stepping into the adult world with just a pay packet, so to speak.
Certainly. I couldn't agree with you more, Trevor. I mean, I've got my son finished high school last year and my daughter's still in high school here in Victoria. Mm. And there was nothing on the curriculum about basic financial understanding, like how to budget, how does your banking work, how do you save, all of those kind of things, how insurance basically works. If you get a car, how do you basically get insurance for it? All that kind of stuff, it's just not there on the curriculum. So you get young people going out into the big wide world, getting their first pay packet, and what do I do with it? What do I need to think about? All that stuff. So I couldn't agree with you more, Trevor.
Well, Ian, if you look at it, every week, 52 weeks in a year, for a whole of our life, we're working for a pay packet. And, I've always said that rich people got money working for them, poor people work for money. So that financial intelligence can get that money working for you if you got the so-called equation or the formula, how to do it, yep?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's one of the big things we switched to as the foundation about 6 years ago was to move out of the space of just doing face-to-face training for people on low incomes. We still do that, but we expanded our suite of offerings. We went digital to talk about and to teach about insurance and superannuation and savings and how to increase your income over time. Moving into that sphere of how you make the most of your money, how you learn to make it work for you instead of you working for it, as you say, Trevor, which is a critically important thing. And it's about, we moved out of the space of instead of trying just to support people with paycheck to paycheck,
yes,
we basically took three premises that we build on, three things we build on. One, that we should have an expectation as Aboriginal people that we should have increasing income over a lifetime of economic participation, you know, because we work for many years. We should earn, we should be earning more money per year, year on year. We should be able to build wealth, that is to save money, to invest money, so that we get income from other things other than just our pay packet. So if you save money, you get interest on it.
Yep.
If you invest it, you get return shares. And the other one is, it's called acquire capital, but really it's basically owning stuff.
Mm.
I can own a house. I can own a block of land. Why can't I do that? And simply because I'm Aboriginal doesn't mean I shouldn't. In fact, but apart from, obviously, our inherent right to the land on which we stand because it's all Aboriginal land.
Sure.
But I should be able to... Why can't I own a nice little holiday house down by the beach? Why can't I own a block of land up in my country? I'm a Yorta Yorta man.
Yes.
Why can't I own a block of land up in my country in northern Victoria? That kind of stuff. So we centred it around those three things and thought, we as Aboriginal people, that's how we should be thinking of ourselves. That's how should we should be thinking about our financial well-being, and that's how people should think about us in relation to the economy.
Well, exactly. And look, if it's not been taught in schools, then we ourselves, I suppose we probably need to bite the bullet and take on the education ourselves, you know. Money is a tool, and we need to know how to use that tool, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's one of those things. I mean, look, one of the things I think which really is the basic stuff for this, and money, like it or lump it, money makes the world go round. It's just the way it is. So how do we make it part of our toolkit for improving our lives?
Yes.
So one of the really big things, so I used to be in government here in Victoria, I was the head of Aboriginal Affairs.
Mm.
One of the things which I suppose I learned over time is there's been a big push on social policy to cure all the ills of our community.
Mm.
But social policy alone doesn't do it. You need economic policy, and that's where money comes into it. And a very, very basic thing is that people have a decent standard of money that they earn or they're accumulating or they have, a lot of their issues disappear because they can afford a decent type of housing. They can afford decent food.
Yes.
They can afford to put clothes on the backs of their children. They can afford to be able to get that extra training that they might want so that they can get a better job to earn a bit more money to make their lives more comfortable, their children's more comfortable, that kind of stuff. That's
exactly.
The good thing, you know.
Exactly.
So how do we use the economy to deal with those things which are disadvantages to the Aboriginal community and not just use social policy? And look, a really basic one, if you're going okay economically, your chances of coming into contact with the criminal justice system are diminished by 100-fold, which means less Aboriginal people in contact with courts, cops and prisons. That's a good thing.
Yes.
You can't deal with it through social policy alone. You need economic policy. So that's why financial well-being is one of the critical things to lifting our people, to not only close the gaps, which I think is a terrible term, but to actually take our place as equals among the rest of Australia.
Exactly.
And to, in fact, lead it in a whole bunch of stuff itself.
And I mentioned that we as individuals probably need to take the, bite the bullet and take the bull by the horn, so to speak. I picked a book, The Barefoot Investor, with Scott Page, the author. And just something simple like that has got me in an equation where I've got the money working for me, you know?
Yeah, look, absolutely. Anything people can do to learn about more about how they can use their money, how they can make their money work for them. And it's particularly young people that we're really interested in focusing on at First Nations. Older people, absolutely, and younger people in particular, because younger Aboriginal people are getting involved in the economy right across the whole of it. They're getting opportunities now to start a career, not just have a job, but start a career. And hopefully they'll be having what we should be expecting as Aboriginal people is not just a job, but being able to have increased income over a lifetime of economic activity, and learning how to make the most of that money as it increases as you earn it, how to invest it, how to save it, how to buy property with it, how to build capital with it, so that we can actually, our people can, beyond closed gaps, it's a term I'm not really comfortable with, closing gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Low aspiration. But take our place
yes.
as equals with the rest of Australia, and in fact lead Australia in some of the things that some of the issues that are befuddling our nation at the moment.
Well, I know there are a few entrepreneurs out there in the black world, so to speak. You know, business people who happen to be black. And look, we can take a page out of their book, but it's about taking control and be disciplined in the process. Yes.
Yeah, oh look, Aboriginal people in business is actually a really good way for us to grow our economic base so that we're participating across the whole of the economy. That's one of the things I think which a lot of the thinking and government policy and the thinking of others has been around just employment. Mm. And it's about, you know, usually I think of Aboriginal people as employees. Well, why can't we be employers?
Exactly.
We own businesses and we employ people.
Definitely.
And Aboriginal people's entrepreneurial capacity is really taking off.
Yes.
And it's taking into new parts of the economy. And that's a really important way, how we take control of our own affairs, how we take control of our own money. So I'm really supportive of the small business, the Aboriginal small business sector, so that we're part of the discussions across how business develops. And to be honest, I think some of the ethics of business, we should introduce some Aboriginal philosophy about responsibility to society and to community. There are elements of the private sector who could do with a bit of a lesson around that from us.
For sure. Look, a very important conversation. Thank you for sharing, Ian. All the best to you and your team, your family. Stay safe and light at the end of the tunnel, my brother. Come up and have a cuppa here in far north Queensland.
As soon as you people are going to let me in, I'll be up there.
You take care, Ian. Bye-bye.
You too, Trevor. See ya.
A deadly yarn there, Ian Hamm, the First Nations Foundation Chairperson, and we're talking about what will it take to truly close the financial gap for Australia's Indigenous population, and that's what it's all about, getting financially intelligent, you mob, and like I said, it's not in the so-called curriculum, in the education system regarding finance and how to make money work for us, so it's about self-education as well, so we need to do our bit there, you mob, and study money. And it's the fact that we work for a pay packet every week, you know, money is a part of our life. So get to learn how to use that that tool. Money is a tool. So get educated, you mob. That's what it's all about. And as I always say, love people, use money. Don't love money, use people. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Bib Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, children who experience poverty 3.3 times more likely to be poor as adults. We're going to catch up a yarn now with University of Melbourne, Professor Roger Wilkins on the line. Professor, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're talking about our children and children who experience poverty 3.3 times more likely to be poor as adults. So what would we say, a case of monkey see, monkey do, or lack of financial intelligence through our parents? What would be the reason for all this, please?
Yeah, look, I think that's part of it. I think that a lack of sort of role models immediately around you that show you a different path that you could take in your life, which would, you know, give you a more secure financial future. I think that's part of it. But I also think it's just reflecting the fact that when you're growing up in a poor household, there's just fewer resources for you that allow you to realise your potential. You have fewer educational opportunities. You have a less stable home environment. Mm. These are the sorts of reasons that are driving the much higher poverty rates for kids that when they're adults who grew up in poor households.
So when you look at Australia being a first world country, you know, in regards to our lifestyle, is poverty in this country? Is it real?
Yes. There are different concepts of poverty, if you like. So, you know, we don't have much of the sort of poverty that you might think of as in a developing country where people are literally starving and don't have shelter.
Sure.
We don't have much of that in our country, but what we do have is a lot of people, about 13% of the population, that don't have enough to participate in what we would regard as the normal activities of Australian life. While they're not starving, they can't really fully participate in the Australian community because they just don't have the resources. How we come at that is that we basically say, well, if you've got less than half the median income, the middle income, then you don't have enough to participate. And, you know, for example, you know, take advantage of educational opportunities is just one example of how you can't participate fully. And this is a very widely used measure of poverty internationally.
Okay.
And it seems to accord with what most people, when you ask them how much do you need to sort of have an acceptable living standard, often end up being around that half median mark.
You mentioned education there. Do you feel that the education system, the curriculum, has a lot to answer for regarding financial intelligence or education or finance?
Well, yes, there's a couple of elements to it. So certainly I think we could be doing more to educate people about how to manage their finances achieve financial security. But I also think that what our research is showing is that we do need to target a bit more of the government resources in the education sector towards disadvantaged kids. So giving them, improving the early childhood education resources and also the school education resources for disadvantaged kids to make up for the fact that they are coming from much more disadvantaged circumstances, and this will, you know, have benefits not only to those kids but also to the broader community, because we're helping people realise their productive potential.
Yes.
They end up paying more taxes, they make fewer demands on government welfare budgets and so forth. So it's really a win-win situation to make these sort of investments.
And regarding your report, your findings as such, Professor, survey, were you communicating with a lot of families you thought were poor and looking at their past and their parents and to come up with the information as such, yes?
Yeah, so it comes from a nationwide study called the Hilda Survey that started in 2001, and so we've been following the same people right across Australia ever since. And so we were able to see these kids as they were growing up and look at whether their families were poor or not, and then we're looking at them up to 18 years later as they're in their young adult years up to age 32. And so we're able to see that, this is how we were able to see that the kids who grew up in poor households were much more likely to be poor when they were hit their early 30s.
And when you look at it, there are some kids who broke through in regard to success and financial intelligence and a successful life. Because you can look at the so-called situation that they're living in and being poor or being living in poverty. That could be the motivation to live a better life, could it not?
Yeah, and there's no doubt that happens for a number of people. So even though you're three times as likely to be poor as an adult if you grew up in a poor household, it's not destiny. The majority of these kids do escape poverty in adulthood, and so they do find a way out of that so-called poverty trap. I think a lot of it would be looking for trying to improve, achieve a better life than they had growing up,
and that could be the motivator.
Yeah, absolutely. But even with that, we're still finding that if you grew up in a poor household, you're still while it's not destiny, you're still more likely to be
a case of where you start out doesn't mean you have to stay there.
No, absolutely.
Exactly. Look, very important information. So probably a thought or message out there to anybody. That's what I'm thinking along the lines of, more motivation. Anybody at any moment can start a new future. The desire to succeed or, stepping outside your comfort zone and, paint the picture and turn into reality, so to speak, Professor.
Yeah, and we certainly see many people doing that, with our data, which is, good. Right across Australia, we certainly see many people that, do take charge of their lives and achieve.
And of course, if we've got a family member doing that, then that in itself is motivation. If they can do it, I can do it too. Or that individual leading the way for families. My family in the future will not be in poverty, and that in itself could be motivated to the siblings, so to speak. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very important conversation. Thank you for sharing, Professor. All the best to your team, your family. Stay safe in the world we live in, and light at the end of the tunnel, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You take care. A beautiful yarn there. That's University of Melbourne Professor Roger Wilkins, author on the report regarding children who experience poverty 3.3 times more likely to be poor as adults. So there it is in regards to the situation, and a lot of people who live in poor families end up poor, but it doesn't have to be that way inclined. Individual, the man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror, you can change your life if you choose to. And the phrase I'm sort of thinking of is anybody at any moment can start a new future, new life. Fantastic. But everything we want in life is outside our comfort zone. So we've got to get uncomfortable, so to speak, to get comfortable. Yeah, there's a food for thought. Thank you very much to Sharon. New mob, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Number you need to call, Yana with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bumbaribrit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
Woolaroola, Woolaroo, New World Banjuri. Follow a track, don't look back, keep right on the road. Follow a track, don't look back, keep right on the road. Follow the story, follow the dream. Dance by the fire, dance by the stream. Woolaroo Banjuri, Bijuri Banjuri, Biri Mari Kundang. Follow one track, don't look back, keep right on the road. Follow one track, don't look back, keep right on the road. Right on the road. Open your eyes, find your feet, dance to the bebera beat. Jilly Bude, Gino Wega, Waruma Tundan, bebera la. Follow one track, don't look back. Keep right on the road. Follow one track, don't look back. Keep right on the road. Keep right on the road. Keep right on. Keep right on the road. Keep right on. Keep right on the road. Keep right on. Keep right on the road. Dance by the fire, dance by the stream. Open your eyes and find your feet. Dance to the beaver a beat. Whoa. Follow one track, don't look back. Keep right on the road. Follow one track, don't look back. Keep right.
G'day you mob, this is Tanya Kernighan with Trendy Trev and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now 1-800-422-416.
Is mystified. Black boy, black boy, black boy. The color of your skin is your pride and joy. Black boy, black boy, black boy. You know your life is not destroyed. Whoa. Mm-hmm.
and stones may break your bones, but names can never hurt you. What's in a name? What's in a name? It's a shame, this racist game. You'll be the one that's having fun. You just keep learning on. So keep your head up high, stand proud and tall. Be strong and carry on.
Folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yeah, to Delhi Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It's I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Big shout out to the NERS team. Hope you're doing well. And it is a Delhi fantastic black network. And to all our First Nation Radio Station across the country, a beautiful network voice for our people, yarn up strong, playing the Delhi music and having the Delhi yarns across this big island of ours. 1-800-422-416, give the Murray call. We've got about 10 minutes left on the program. We've got the third State of Origin coming up this Wednesday at Suncorp Stadium. It's all-one-all draw, so the winner will take out the series. Looking at the Queensland team at this point in time, Valentine's home back at fullback for Queensland, Xavier Coates on the wing, as well as Corey Allen debut on the wing for Queensland. In the centres, Kurt Capewell and Dane Gagai. Cameron Munster is past the head injury that he had in the game two. Daly Cherry Evans, captain and halfback. Forwards, Christian Welch, Jake Friend, Josh Papali. And on the second rows is Felice Kofusi and Jadiri Sua, and also Tina Falafusu would be in the forwards there. Interchange is Harry Grant, debut, Lindsay Collins, Joy Arrow and Demanis Louie. And the Blues New South Wales side, fullback is James Tedescu. Two is Daniel Taupu and Josh Adokar on the wings. And you have Clint Gutherson and Jack Whiten in the centres. 5-8 playing Deadly as well in the second game. Cody Walker with Nathan Cleary, halfback. 8 is Daniel Sefetidi, Damien Cook, hooker, Payne Haas in the forwards, and Angus Crichton, Tyson Fitzwell, and Jake Travovich at lock. And the interchange is 14 Dale Finucane, 15 Junior Paolo, 16 Nathan Brown, 17 Isaiah Yeo. So that's the lineup at this point in time. Unless there's any changes coming up leading up to Wednesday's game, maybe you want to give us a call and tell us who you think will take out the series. But this is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Queensland to win, but some of you might be out there be saying you can't be serious about that. Let's go to Annie Wilmer Burgess with a Delhi track here. You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. To Delhi.
You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. There's a little light in all of us by God's design. But you can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. How can you ask for truth if you do not truthfully live? How can you ask forgiveness if you don't forgive? I don't mean to bring you down or speak to you unkind, but you can't be a beacon if your light shine. You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. You can't be
be good if your light don't shine?
There's a little light in all of us by God's design.
But you can't be a beacon if your light don't shine.
How can you ask a child to be honest and true? A child can only judge what's right by what he sees in you. How can you offer vision yet walk around blind? You can't see a beacon if its light don't shine.
You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. You can't be a beacon if your light don't shine.
There's a little light in all of us by God's design.
But you can't be a beacon if your light don't shine.
May God's love surround you. May you find a brighter day. May He grant you you seek in every way. God's light burns in each life, yours and mine. And you can be a beacon if you'll just let it shine.
You can be a beacon if you let it shine. You can be a beacon if you let it shine.
There's a little light in all of us by God's design.
Drank from a falling glass, that it was sealed. Strange how that kiss and that toast blew so many lives away. Hey, Mr. Diplomat, would you learn to cover?
Judgment Day,
when you face the light,
blew away, kissed away your hair, your heart,
in the genocide.
song there for East Timor, Guana, here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray, going to sign off for you, Mobber. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. 24-7, you can text the brother, 045-714-0550. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And don't forget our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Otherwise, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe, you mob. We are still in pandemic. And there's no vaccine at this point in time, getting close to, but let's not be lackadaisy, you mob. Too deadly.
I like to stand my ground like the next gal. You think you're better than what do you think I am?